all that is or could ever be known is experience. And all experience appears in the mind and is known by the mind. Just check that statement for yourself. I am not going to say anything this evening that cannot be tested in your own experience. See if you can find anything now in your experience other than thinking, imagining, remembering, feeling, sensing, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling. Whether the mind perceives a world outside of itself, or whether the mind projects a world within itself. In both cases, its knowledge of that world is only as good as its knowledge of itself. In other words, in order to know the nature of anything, the mind must first know its own nature. Everything the mind knows or experiences will appear in accordance with its knowledge of itself. Therefore, there can be no higher knowledge than to know the essential nature of the mind. And there can be no higher endeavor for a human mind to engage in than to explore its own essential nature. Reason why scientists, after all this time, have still not discovered the nature of reality is because they have still not discovered the nature of their own minds. So ask yourself the question, what is the essential nature of my mind? In other words, your mind is asking itself, what is my essential, irreducible nature? Whatever is essential to the mind must be that part of the mind that can never be removed from it. Anything that can be removed from the mind must be superfluous to it. no thought is essential to the mind, because thoughts are continuously vanishing and yet the mind remains intact. Therefore, no thought is essential to the mind's nature. No feeling is essential to mind, because feelings are always coming and going. Feelings can be removed from the mind and therefore cannot be part of its essential, irreducible nature. Sensations, that is the tingling sensation behind our eyes, the tingling sensation of our hands or feet. These sensations are always moving, changing, flowing and disappearing. No sensation lasts long. Therefore, no sensation is essential to the mind. Likewise, no perception, and by perception I mean sights, sounds, tastes, textures, and smells, is essential to the mind. All perceptions are continuously appearing and disappearing. Therefore, they do not go into the make of the mind. What is it that cannot be removed from your mind? Don't say, I don't know. If you are experiencing your mind, you must be experiencing its reality. When I say, if you are experiencing your mind, I don't mean to suggest that you are one thing and your mind is another. The mind is that which experiences. So if the mind is experiencing its own activity of thinking, feeling, sensing and perceiving, it must be experiencing its reality. So ask yourself the question now. The mind is asking itself, what element of myself always remains with me? What has never been parted or separated from me? Even since we have been sitting here for 20 minutes or so, each of our minds has had innumerable thoughts, feelings, sensations and perceptions. All of these have appeared and disappeared. If all there was to our mind was a series of intermittent thoughts, feelings, sensations and perceptions, then our experience would be a collection of short-lived objects, intermittent objects. By objects in this context I mean thoughts, sensations and perceptions. But our experience is not just a collection of intermittent objects. It is one smooth, continuous flow. From what does experience derive its continuity? Thoughts, feelings, sensations and perceptions are not continuous. But experience is continuous. from what does it derive its continuity? Don't say, I don't know. You are experience. You are experiencing the continuity of experience. What element of your mind, what element of your mind never disappears? See what happens to your mind when it asks itself that question. Any object towards which the mind might direct itself would by definition be intermittent. It would come and go. So where does the mind go in order to find the answer to the question, what is the essential, irreducible, unremovable element of myself? Ask yourself that question now and see what happens to your mind. Notice that any direction that the mind goes in is always towards an object. That is always towards a thought, feeling, sensation, or perception. Therefore, the answer to the question, what is the essential, irreducible nature of myself, takes the mind in a directionless direction. In this directionless direction, the mind travels away from its customary objects of experience, back towards its essential nature. This is what the poet Alfred Lord Tennyson meant when he said, "Seek knowledge like a sinking star beyond the utmost bounds of human thought." Seek knowledge like a sinking star. In order to find, for the mind to find its own essential, irreducible nature, it must sink like a star. it must sink backwards or inwards towards its source, rather than going outwards towards an object. Tennyson said, "Seek knowledge like a sinking star." He was referring to this fundamental knowledge, the mind's knowing of its own essential nature, upon which all other knowledge and experience is based. It is a unique knowledge, the mind's knowledge of its own essence. Ramana Maharshi referred to this same investigation as the sinking of the mind into the heart. The sinking of the mind into the heart of itself. The Sufi Jalaluddin Rumi referred to the same investigation when he said, "Flow down and down and down in ever widening rings of being." Same investigation that the mystic Lala referred to when she said, "I have been seeking God for so many years, but when I stopped and turned back, there he was within me." It is the investigation that is referred to in the Gospels. When thou, in St. Matthew's Gospel, when thou prayest, close the door, enter into thy closet, and pray to thy Father who is in secret. All these people, in their own unique way, referred to this sinking of the mind, this directionless direction, this pathless path that the mind takes in order to recognize its own essential, irreducible nature. No mind, no particular mind is privileged in this respect. All minds have equal access to their own essential reality. We do not have to be educated. intelligent, healthy. All minds have equal access to their own reality. The Buddha, Rumi, Ramana Maharshi, none of them had privileged access to their essential nature. None of them had anything that you or I don't have. All the Buddha knew was the content of his own mind. Likewise, Ramana Maharshi, Jesus Christ, Jalaluddin Rumi. Reluctant to give the essential nature of mind a name, because all names by definition refer to objective experience. But if we want to discuss the nature of mind or the nature of reality, we have to provisionally give it a name. The reason I take some time before giving it a name is that I want to be sure that when I give it a name, it refers to something that each of us is experiencing and knowing for themselves, not some abstract concept. See that the only element of your experience that remains continuously present is the experience of being aware. Just test that statement in your own experience. Being aware is the only element of experience that is never removed from you. It is the only stable element in experience. The only continuous element of experience. In fact, even to say that it is continuous is not quite right, it is a concession to the mind's belief in time. It would be more accurate to say it is ever present. Your thoughts are continuously coming and going. Feelings and sensations are always coming and going. Perceptions are always appearing and disappearing. But all these appear and disappear against the background of being aware. Being aware is, as such, the canvas or the screen upon which experience is playing. As such, being aware is to experience, as a self-aware screen is to a movie. This is a magical screen that is watching the movie that is playing on it. The experience of being aware is the screen, the self-aware screen, upon which all experience plays. And just as all there is to a movie is the screen, so all there is to experience is the knowing of it, or the awareness of it. In other words, all experience is a colouring of being aware, or awareness itself. Just as all movies are a colouring of the screen. As such, being aware, or awareness itself, is the essential, irreducible essence of all experience. Just check that statement for yourself. You may be bored by this introduction. You may be depressed. You may be lonely. You may be happy. You may be at peace. Whatever you're feeling, whatever you're thinking, whatever you're experiencing, you are aware of it. Being aware pervades all experience. See if you can find any part of your experience that is not pervaded by being aware. And don't just include your current experience. Use your imagination. Go to the extremes of experience. You might be an astronaut landing on the moon. You might be a nuclear physicist or a microbiologist. You might be having a near-death experience or a vision of the Virgin Mary. You might be on your deathbed or just being born. You might be deeply depressed or ecstatically happy. In all these experiences, being aware is present. Being aware is the common element, the common denominator in all experience. And as such, it doesn't share the limits of any particular experience. Just as the screen is the common element in all movies, but doesn't share the limits of any particular movie. In other words, being aware, or awareness itself, is always in the same pristine condition. Nothing ever happens to it. Just as nothing ever happens to the screen on which the movie is playing. Objective experience is continuously changing, but the subjective experience of being aware always remains the same. If I were to ask you now to refer to your thoughts, sensations and perceptions, and compare that experience with the experience of your thoughts, sensations and perceptions yesterday, or last year, or 20 years ago, each of those experiences would be different. But if I were to ask you to go now to the experience of being aware, and to remember the experience of being aware yesterday, or last year, or 20 years ago, or when you were 5-year-old girls and boys, the experience of being aware is always identical in each of these situations. Being aware never evolves, it never ages, it is never stained or moved by experience, it is never hurt or harmed or destroyed. Remember, I am not talking about some abstract awareness that I have special access to, that you don't have, or that Ramana Maharshi and the Buddha had special privileged access to, that you or I don't have. I'm simply talking about the essential nature of each of our minds. That means the essential nature of our self, what we call I. Do you not all feel that you have been essentially the same person all your life? Well, what is it that accounts for the feeling of always being the same person? Are you not now the same person that you were when you were a 5-year-old girl or boy? And do you not refer to that same person as I, the I that has remained with you all your life? Well, what is that? None of your thoughts, feelings, sensations or perceptions have remained with you all your life, and therefore do not qualify as I. What is worthy of the name I? Only the experience of being aware, or awareness itself. This means that you, I, the very self that each of us is always in the same pristine condition. It has never been stained or harmed or hurt or sullied by any experience. No experience leaves a trace or a blemish on it. It is pristine, indestructible, indivisible. Imperturbable. And thus its nature is said to be peace itself. Not a peace that is the result of some disciplined practice, not a peace that is a result of trying to do something with the mind or cease doing anything with the mind. A peace that passeth understanding, that is a peace that has nothing to do with the activity or the cessation of activity of the mind. the ever-present, imperturbable peace of simply being aware, that is present both as the background of all experience, but also within all experience. And therefore no experience has to be denied or disciplined or got rid of. The experience of being aware shines equally brightly in our deepest depression as it does in our most ecstatic moments. Being aware is that which illuminates all experience. All experience is illuminated by it, but it is illuminated by itself. Like the sun, it is self-luminous or self-knowing. It is not possible for the mind to go towards its own essential nature. If I were to ask each of you now to stand up and take a step towards yourself, where would you go? No step would take you any closer to yourself, nor indeed would any step take you any further from yourself. You take yourself with you wherever you go. It is not possible for the mind to go towards awareness any more than it is possible for a character in a movie to go towards the screen. The mind that seeks awareness, that is the mind that seeks the peace or fulfillment that is inherent in awareness, is like a character in the movie who travels the world in search of the screen. It is the madness from which most of us suffer. That seeks peace and happiness in objective experience, that is, in objects, substances, activities, states of mind, and relationships, is like a current in the ocean in search of water. Let your mind come to rest in this understanding. Not a disciplined rest, not a disciplined silence of the mind. The inevitable silence of the mind that is born of true understanding. The silence of the mind that is equally present when thinking, sensing and perceiving is taking place, or when it isn't. all that is necessary is to cease being exclusively fascinated by the clamor of experience. As soon as our exclusive fascination with the clamor of objective experience softens or relaxes, the essential nature of the mind begins to shine, begins to make its presence felt in our experience. First of all, in the background of experience, and then in the midst of experience. And the more it makes its presence felt in our lives, the more we feel its innate peace and happiness. There is this upwelling of peace and happiness from within the depths of our being. So that was my brief introduction to the perennial non-dual understanding. Please feel free to ask about anything that you'd like to discuss. Just stay standing up so I can see you. Yeah. You say that sometimes awareness or the experience of being aware is not even present. Tell us about that experience.
It's like my consciousness not aware of itself.
Well, that may be so, but my question was more specific. You said awareness fluctuates and sometimes it is not even present. I want to know about the experience of awareness not being present. Tell us about your knowledge of that experience. What is it like, for instance, to have the experience of the absence of awareness? And with what do you know the experience? What is it that is present there, registering or knowing the absence of awareness? And what would be the essential nature of that witness? What would its first quality be? The one that witnesses the absence of awareness.
It's so faint that it's hard for me to put my finger on it.
We're just trying to find out what the quality of this witness would be. It is obviously present. Yes, you said this witness is present, knowing the experience of the absence of awareness. So being present is its first quality. What other quality does it have? It is witnessing, or knowing, or aware. That is awareness. What you are saying is tantamount to saying, I am aware of the absence of awareness. If awareness were absent, how would you know the experience, and therefore how could you legitimately claim the experience as your own? You believe that there is something called the absence of awareness. But you have never had, nor could you ever have, nor indeed has anyone ever had, the experience of the absence of awareness. Now, when I say nobody has or could ever have the experience of the absence of awareness, I suggest that it is a person that has the experience of being aware or not being aware. I don't mean to imply that. Only awareness is aware. A person is not aware. Awareness is not an attribute of a person. It is not the body that is aware, it is awareness that is aware. So our knowledge, the simple knowledge that each of us has, I am aware, is awareness is knowledge of itself. And is that not our most primary, fundamental experience? Just the experience of being aware. Before we are aware of anything, we must first be aware. And the experience of being aware shines in each of our minds as the knowledge, I am. That knowledge is everybody's knowledge. Can you not all say now, legitimately, from your experience, I am? Is there anyone here who cannot say, I am? Please don't put your hand up. The reason we can say I am is because we know that I am. The I that I am knows that I am.
But that comes and goes in my experience.
Tell us about the experience of it going. You say it comes and goes in. Okay, you have no answer. If I were to ask you now, are you aware? What would you say?
Yes.
To what experience do you refer in order to answer yes to that question?
You want to vary the.
No. If I had asked you, are you aware of the buildings outside? What would you say?
Yeah.
And what do you do? Where do you go with your mind in order to get that answer?
I say to myself...
No, you look at the buildings. You look at the buildings. If I say, are you aware of the buildings? You look at the buildings, and as a result of that experience, you say, yes, I am aware of the buildings. If I were to ask you, are you aware of the hum of the AC? What would you say?
No.
Okay. If I were to ask you, are you aware of the audio equipment here?
Yeah.
What would you say?
I see a case.
Okay. So to what experience do you refer that gives you the ability to say yes? What do you do with your attention? It's not a trick question. You direct it towards the box.
Yeah.
Now, if I were to say to you, are you aware of the sensation at the soles of your feet? What would you say?
I am.
And what do you do with your attention to arrive at that answer? Where do you direct your attention?
The soles of my feet.
Perfect. One more question. If I were to ask you now, are you aware of whatever thoughts are present? What would you say? Okay, you're not having any thoughts, that's fine. Are you aware of any feelings? Are you aware of your feelings?
Yeah.
Okay, to what experience do you refer, or where do you direct your attention in order to answer yes to that question?
Almost directing it a step back into the past.
You direct it towards your feelings. If you are having a thought, and I were to ask you, are you aware of your thoughts? Pause, check your experience. In that pause, you direct your attention towards the thought, and as a result of that, you say, yes, I am aware of my thoughts. Now, if I ask you the question, are you aware? What do you say? Perfect. To what experience do you refer in order to answer yes to that question? Where do you direct your attention?
Into my body.
No, you don't. When you go inside your body, direct your attention inside your body now. All you find there is sensation.
Right. And based on sensation?
No, it's not based on sensation. When I ask you the question, are you aware? Pause. Yes. In that pause, you go to the experience of being aware. You become aware of being aware. You, awareness, become aware of being aware. It's the most obvious, simple, ordinary experience there is. Well, you are aware of your spacey, I don't know. Therefore, you must be aware.
Okay, but that's not the goal.
What you're saying, what you're saying is, when I'm watching the movie, what you're saying is tantamount to this. When I'm watching a movie or a series of programs on TV, the screen comes and goes. Sometimes it's present, sometimes it's hazy, sometimes it vanishes. That's what you're saying. The screen is, in fact, the only element of the movie that is not hazy, that is not coming and going. The experience of being aware is the only element of experience that is not hazy, or intermittent, or coming and going. I'm saying the content of your mind is always fluctuating, but the essence of your mind is never fluctuating.
But I'm saying that my ability to pay attention to what's going on fluctuates. Maybe that's
the better way. That is very true. But we're not interested in giving our attention to, at the moment, I'm not saying that there isn't a place for being interested in objective experience. There is. But it's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the essential nature of the mind whose attention to objects fluctuates. Attention itself fluctuates, but the source of attention, or that from which attention rises, itself never fluctuates. And the purpose of all spiritual practice in all traditions is to recognize the nature of that. In spiritual circles, we call it the search for enlightenment. Out on the street, we call it the search for peace and happiness. It's the same search. It's the one thing that all 7 billion of us want above all else. In fact, it is the only thing that all 7 billion of us want. The vast majority of it seek it in objects, substances, activities, states of mind, and relationships. And when we have been sufficiently failed by all of these, we begin to either intuitively or at the suggestion of a friend begin to search in the only direction that yet remains unexplored, the directionless direction. None of us would be here tonight if the objects of experience had satisfied our search for peace and happiness. We have all suspected, to a greater or lesser extent, that objects can never provide the peace and happiness for which we long.
Can attention be used to find awareness?
No. It's only possible to attend to an object. Attention. The word attention comes from two Latin words, a, meaning to or towards, and tendere, to stretch. So attention is always a stretching of awareness towards an object. In the same way that in order to light something up, that the sun directs the light towards that object and illuminates itself. But the sun cannot direct its light towards itself. It is too close to itself to know itself in subject-object relationship. It illuminates itself simply by being itself. In other words, it is only possible to attend to or pay attention to objective experience. If we want to know the essence of experience, attention must sink or fall or relax or flow down and down and down into its source. The peace and happiness for which attention seeks and longs lives at its source, not its destiny. It can never go there. It can only sink into it or relax into it. And for this reason, true meditation is never an activity of the mind. It is not something we can practice. If we are practicing meditation, we are not meditating. Hi.
Tremendous periods of openness, and then I seem to crash into a brick wall, and I want to learn how to bring a little more balance into my experience. It's been very energetic in one way, and I feel if it were just the energetic and emotional component that I could handle it, I have a great deal of trust, I feel, even though the trust can seem very secret in the background. But it's when it moves up to the level of mind and thought that I get attached, and say if a fear comes up, it's almost as though it's impossible for me to disentangle from that thought object or that thought emotional matrix, and this leads to the spiral. And my tendency is to probably go out into the world, into loved ones, into in order to get out of that spiral.
But when you go out into the world, do you ever not take yourself with you?
No.
Do you ever go anywhere in the world where you are not present?
No.
So going out into the world, wherever you go in the world or wherever you go in experience, you take yourself with you. So it doesn't matter where you go in experience, yourself is always present. In other words, you don't have to manipulate experience. You don't have to say, I only want these kind of experiences, not those kind of experiences. Because it's only in certain kinds of experience that I'm in touch with my true nature. It's like saying, I only want to watch beautiful movies about nature. Because as soon as I watch a terrifying thriller, I no longer see the screen. So I have to have a particular kind of movie. So as long as you are seeking peace and happiness in a particular kind of experience, it will always seem to elude you. The experience of being aware and the peace and fulfillment that flow from it is not any kind of objective experience. It shines equally brightly in a deep depression as it does in our most ecstatic feelings. So as long as you are looking for it in a particular feeling, it is your very search for it that makes it seem as if it is absent.
So if a feeling of, say, I've been dealing with this kind of despair recently, does that come up as a way of teaching me to, or is the despair just the resistance to my present experience? I guess that would be
with respect, I'm not interested in your despair. I'm interested in your happiness, your peace. And in fact, your despair is your feeling that peace and happiness is missing. It's not possible to be in despair without longing for happiness. Despair is another name for the search for happiness. Don't be so fascinated by your despair. The very fact that you can name it means that you are aware of it. The experience of being aware is shining in your despair. But it seems to be missing because you are so involved with your despair, and you are trying to change the experience of despair into one called happiness. Instead of trying to change one experience into another, see that which is present in all experience. That is the remedy for despair. To look for it anywhere else is madness. To look for it anywhere else, you may, in other words, in objects, activities, substances, etc., may, when you acquire the object, give you a brief respite from your despair. But your despair will come back. And your despair is telling you, stop. Your despair is, in fact, happiness saying to you, stop looking for me in objects. I'm not there. I can never be delivered via objective experience. Turn round. I am behind you. I am your very own self. And your despair will grow deeper. Until you get its message. What you are looking for is so close. It is so close to you, you cannot even go towards it. It is the stuff that is illuminating your despair. It is the stuff that is making your despair knowable. It is shining in your despair. When you say to yourself, you're feeling despairing, say to yourself, I am aware of my despair. And then be interested in the experience of being aware, rather than the despair that you are aware of. Give your attention to that. When I say your attention, I don't mean to contradict what I previously said. It's just a manner of speaking. Give your heart to that. Be interested in that. Don't let the darkness of the movie prevents you from seeing the screen. We'll come to you afterwards. Yep.
I feel that I don't exist.
Tell us about the one who has that experience. For those of you at the back that didn't hear the question, she said, I have the experience sometimes that I don't exist. So tell us about, not about the feeling of not existing, but about the one that is aware of it.
I'm not aware of it.
The one that knows that feeling.
Yeah.
Does that one exist?
It's very big. It's huge.
That may be so, but that's not not our question. The question is, you said, I feel that I don't exist.
Yeah.
Who has that feeling? What is it that knows the feeling of not existing? Whatever it is, you call it I. You said, I have the experience of not existing. What is the I that has the experience of not existing?
I have the experience that...
I don't want to know about your experience. I want to know about the I that knows it.
Okay. The big self knows.
Tell us about that one.
Okay.
Is it present during the experience of non-existence?
Oh, yeah.
Well, in that case, it exists. It's present. Yes?
Oh.
It is you that knows the experience of non-existence. So the I that knows that experience must be present and knowing. Otherwise, you couldn't claim non-existence as your experience.
Feel that this person exists. just awareness exists.
You're absolutely right. The person, as we normally conceive it, doesn't exist from the Latin ex sistere, ex meaning out of, and sistere to stand. The suggestion being that an object, in this case your body, stands out from its background of awareness with its own independent existence. You're right, your body does not exist in its own right. No thing exists. No thing stands out from the background of awareness with its own independent reality or identity. In the same way that when you're watching a movie, although the flowers seem to be in the foreground and the mountains seem to be in the background, in fact, none of the objects, the apparent objects in the movie, stand out from the screen or exist. In fact, nothing exists. No thing exists or stands out from the background of awareness with its own independent reality. And when I say nothing exists, it's not a nihilist statement that's denying experience. It's denying the existence of a multiplicity and diversity of separate objects and selves, each with their own independent existence. Those kind of objects don't exist. They are, as such, an illusion. However, as Huang Po said, people ignore the reality of the illusory world. All illusions have a reality to them. Your body, as an object made out of stuff called matter, or the world as a collection of objects made out of matter, is an illusion. But there is a reality to our experience of the body and the world. What is that? Consciousness. It's the only substance present in experience. Does anyone here know anything other than the knowing of your experience? Try now to find something in experience other than the knowing of it. Have any of you ever had the experience of anything else apart from the knowing of experience? In other words, the only substance present in experience is knowing. What legitimacy, or knowing, that is consciousness, awareness, what legitimacy is there to the belief that there is something other than knowing or consciousness? There is none. Matter, dead inert stuff called matter, is the stuff that supposedly exists outside of knowing or independent of knowing. Scientists have been looking for this stuff for 2,000 years. They still haven't found it. Do you think they're going to find it one day? No, it's not there. No one does or could ever experience anything other than the knowing of experience. Knowing or consciousness is the only substance present in experience. The belief that there is something independent of knowing or independent of consciousness or outside of consciousness is the fundamental presumption of our world culture. Look around the world. Are we so sane? Do you think the insanity of humanity might have something to do with its fundamental understanding of itself? in an absurd and irrational, convoluted line of reasoning. Most people and most scientists assert the existence of something called matter, although they have never experienced it. And some nowadays even go as far as denying the existence of consciousness, although consciousness is all that they have ever experienced. And these are the people that are revered by the press. We laugh at it, and of course it's comic, but it's also a tragedy. The suffering that we experience within ourselves and the conflicts that are experienced amongst families, communities and nations can be traced back to this fundamental presumption that matter, dead inert stuff called matter, is the fundamental reality of experience, and consciousness, the only thing that is ever actually known, is derived from matter. It's like saying screens are produced by emails, or the sky is produced by clouds, or waves produce the ocean. In any other field of knowledge, such absurd reasoning would be condemned.
It feels weird, even though I know it's awareness and my personality and this frame is melted during the times when I experience all of it. You know,
just speak up a little bit so everyone can hear.
It's such an odd experience. You know, it's like, I'm going, get
used to it. Just get used to it. It's odd in contrast with your old belief and feeling, I am a solid, dense body made out of stuff called matter, and all these are objects and selves with independent from me, made out of something other than me. It is in relation to that belief which has become the norm for most of us that what we are speaking of here seems weird. But just revisit this understanding again, 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 and again, and again, until it is your home. Until you take your stand, make your home in this understanding, and then you will look back at the old belief and feeling that I am a solid, dense self in which consciousness lives, and all these objects and others are separate and independent from myself. One day, hopefully, humanity will look back on these ideas as we now look back on the flat earth theory or the geocentric theory. You see, when people thought the earth was flat, they did so because they just trusted the experience, the evidence of their senses. You walk along the earth, it's flat, it's just flat wherever you go, however far you walk, it's always flat, more or less. Therefore the earth is flat. And then people thought that the sun went round the earth. It's obvious. Every morning the sun rises over there, and every morning the earth stays still and the sun moves around it. So the evidence of the senses says the sun obviously goes round the earth. So in both these cases people just trusted the evidence of their senses. As Einstein defined common sense as a series of prejudices that most people acquire by the age of 18. Yeah, it's, if we trust the evidence of common sense, it seems that the awareness with which we are aware of our experience lives in and is a derivative of the body. That's how it appears superficially, like the flat earth or the geocentric earth. But when we investigate it, our only knowledge of the body, or our only experience of the body, is a series of intermittent sensations and perceptions. And all sensations and perceptions appear in consciousness. Consciousness doesn't appear in them. So get used to this new understanding. You'll feel a little queasy to begin with, but it will become more and more stable in your life the more you return to it, until it becomes the new norm.
When I look in the mirror, I go, what is Sylvia? It's kind of like, who are you?
Good evening.
Hi.
I, as a separate self, often find myself witnessing or the experience which takes place in that realm of which is the knowing.
The
knowing.
Knowing.
The knowing.
Yes.
I, the separate self, often find myself observing the experience taking place. I want to know if I am correct as being a separate self observing, or I have to change my whole perception of the observer observing. I can't tell the difference between the separate self and the I-ness.
Okay, all right. So let's start with the apparently separate self, the one that knows your experience, or the one that observes your experience. Yes? That's your question, is about the nature of that one. Yeah, so tell us about your experience of that which knows or observes your experience.
But here's where I am puzzled. If I am separate, or I am
just consider the question. The question is, tell us about the nature of the one that knows your experience. Because that's what we call the self, or I. Tell us about that. Don't tell us about your thoughts, feelings, sensations, or perceptions. They are what you know. Your question is about the nature of the knower. Tell us about that. In that case, what if it's omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient? How could there be any division or separation in it?
Because I'm conditioned otherwise.
Is the one that knows your experience conditioned? It's unconditioned. Does it have any limits within it?
No.
How can something that has no limits within it be separate from anything else? If it was separate from anything else, there would have to be a place where it stopped and the other thing started. In other words, it would have to have a limit.
Why? Because I lack the confidence.
Okay. So if you lack the...
It's too easy.
If you lack the confidence, it's because you're not yet used to it. You only go there from time to time. Just go there more and more often. Take your stand. Say to yourself, in every experience, test yourself, not just in relatively peaceful, pleasant circumstances like these. Say to yourself, in all experience, I am aware of my thoughts, I am aware of my perceptions, I am aware of my feelings, I am aware of the turbulence in the world, I am aware, I am aware, I am aware, I am aware. Pervades your experience and become interested in the experience of being aware.
Do I go there with my mind?
No, you can't go there with your mind. When you say, can I go there with my mind? With your mind, you can only go towards an object. If I were to ask you now, think of a pink elephant. You can go there. Yeah? If I were to ask you, think of someone you love, you can go there. Now if I were to ask you, think of that which knows your experience. What happens to your mind when you try to do that?
It freezes.
It comes to an end. Because that which knows our experience is not in any direction that is known by the mind. The mind can only know something in time and space. And that which knows time and space is not in time and space. Therefore the mind has no access to it, although it is made of it. Just as the character in the movie can never find the screen, although she is made of it.
So to function as that.
Sorry?
To function as that. What do I have to do? Absolutely nothing?
No. First of all, establish in your feeling understanding that you are that, and then to the best of your ability, align your thoughts and feelings and your subsequent activities and relationships with that feeling understanding. So that all your thoughts and feelings and your subsequent activities and relationships express this understanding and the peace and fulfillment and love that is inherent in it. About love.
Love. And I had the experience of love and like the I in me connecting to the other I's and people. And it's a beautiful experience. And it, not always, but I feel like connecting on that level. I have some empathy, or I'm able to connect on a level. When I experience that kind of awareness and consciousness, though, I see it as love, but then fairly quickly after, I become like craving for it. It becomes more of like attachment. And so I'm trying to understand my experience of love and how love is different. It the love feels free. The attachment feels constricted and not free.
Yeah.
And but I'm not sure how, when it switches and how then to be free again and be in that love relationship.
What actually takes place in the experience of love? When you feel that you love someone, what do you feel? It's not a trick question. Just describe it as best you can.
Yeah, not it's not a romantic love.
Sure.
It's not
okay.
It's
yeah.
The sameness.
Perfect.
The sameness.
Perfect. It's the sameness. Isn't the experience of love the collapse of the distinction or separation between you and the other?
Yes.
Normally, we think there is distance, separation between us. But when we feel love for someone, we feel, to a greater or lesser extent, that distance or separation dissolves, and we say, I love you.
And when we say,
well,
I love you,
well, okay, but that's just the common way of expressing this experience of the absence of distance or separation. When we are deeply in love, is that not the experience of losing all boundaries between yourself and the other? In the experience of being deeply in love, do you not feel at one or merged with the other? So the experience of love, as you rightly say, is not a romantic feeling, or it is the experience of our shared being. That's what love is, the experience of our shared being. The experience that what you essentially are, the essence of your mind, being aware or awareness itself, is the same essence as my mind. In other words, awareness is not a property of individual bodies. Awareness is not divided up between bodies. It is the single, infinite, indivisible screen within which all our individual minds are precipitated. So at the level of the mind, there are distinctions and differences in experience. But the essence of each of our minds is the same indivisible, infinite, self-aware being. And the recognition of that is in others is what we call love. Our recognition of that in objects is what we call beauty. Beauty is to objects what love is to people and animals. The collapse of the distinction of self and other.
Having experienced that,
that
feels like God, that feels like
that is
unity.
That
funny
is what is
but
called in.
But sometimes it'll, sometimes it eludes me too, and then it becomes like more of a craving. Or
yes,
you're
right. It's what in the religious traditions is referred to as God, or God's infinite self-aware being. So God is the religious name for it. I is the common name for it. And consciousness is the spiritual name for it, or awareness.
When it shifts to the craving, or it shifts to something other than that...
That's
that
when we
kind of
believe that the love we feel is derived from the object. Mm-hmm. When we forget that the love we feel is not produced by or dependent upon the object or the person. As soon as we think the person produces this love, in other words, this love is limited to that person, then, as you rightly say, the experience of love disappears, and in its place, craving or attachment
appears. Yes, like a desire that's not fulfilled in the same
yes.
way as...
Yes, yes. And we go towards another person in order to fulfill that desire, thinking that the other person can give love to us, whereas the experience of love is the revelation of our own shared self-aware being. Love can never be limited to a person or a relationship. It can be shared in relationship. It can be expressed in relationship. And it is expressed in one way with our intimate partner, in another way with our parent, with another way with our child, in another way with our dog, in another way with the next door neighbor, in another way with the cab driver that we meet just once. So the expression of love is unique to individual, but the love itself is indivisible, shared. It's never personal.
Thank you very much. I've been listening.
I wanted to share something and I have a question too. I started painting at the age of 13. It was sort of a difficult period, and then there was this moment of like love, really, what we were talking about. I still remember it. I was looking out of the window and it was raining, and it was just like I was the rain, and I was feeling the leaves, and I could just, and I started painting soon after that, and I've painted all my life. So what happens is that I feel now in my life that it's like there's a fan all the time on in my mind, and papers are moving, and I'm aware of the screen, but the screen is always out of focus, or it's disrupted, or you can call it like a kind of anxiety as well. But when I start working, and it takes a while to get into it, it's all calms down. And it feels like I feel I get to know what I'm really thinking or what I'm really feeling. And it just feels like happiness or whatever. But the rest of the time I'm not like that.
Yes, it's because the rest of the time your attention is jumping from one object to another, never resting very long on any one object. So this makes you feel that awareness is always changing, always moving, because your attention is always changing and moving. And your painting centers your attention. Your painting is your mantra. It gathers the disparate energies of your mind onto a single object. So your mind steadies, and as a result, no, you're not aware of it, but as a result of this steadying of your mind, the background of awareness seems to come into focus. In fact, the background of awareness was always there, it's always in focus, but it was muddied or dispersed apparently by the activity of your mind. So the painting brings your mind to, although you're still directing your mind towards an object, your attention is now focused on one object rather than on 10,000 things, and this gives the mind some steadiness and allows the peace that is in the background of awareness to shine through. It's like when you're sometimes you see them, you're watching a YouTube clip and there's a 15-second advert before the clip, and the advert consists of a series of images coming really fast to you, and you feel jarred by the experience because they're so quick, and the quickly moving and changing images seem to fragment the screen. And then when the movie you want to watch, whatever it is, the landscape comes on the image, and the image steadies, suddenly the screen seems to become more available. In fact, it was always there, but it was seemingly muddied or dispersed because of the activity of your mind. So your painting allows your mind to come to some kind of rest, and the peace of the background shines through as a result. So the next step, having allowed your mind to come to rest on a single object, is to now relax the focus of attention from that object and allow the mind to begin to sink back into the peace of its source. Do you know the feeling of getting into a warm bath on a cold winter's night and just abandoning your body to the warmth of the water? Would you ever ask somebody how to do that? How do I relax into the warmth of the water? How do I relax my mind into the warmth of awareness? There's no how-to. It's the opposite of a how-to. All how-tos are about the activity of the mind. We're talking about the relaxing of the mind, the sinking of the mind, the falling of the mind, the flowing down of the mind into the heart of awareness, the resting of the mind in the heart of awareness. There's no how-to. There's no method or practice. It is a non-practice. If you're doing it, you're not doing it.
I think when I'm painting, I lose myself. I'm not even there. I become just what is talking.
That's okay. Lose yourself in your painting. Of all the things you can lose yourself in, painting is a pretty good thing to lose yourself in. Don't worry about that. I'm sorry, I haven't understood your question.
Okay.
Try again.
You know, sometimes, like after I leave this room, I think I'll be highly energized in a particular manner.
Okay.
You spoke. I was at a Shavuot retreat a week ago, and it took me a while to resettle again.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm wanting to know if you have any thoughts about how to handle when, you know, the energy does.
I'm
stir you, and then you've got to settle and return. Yeah.
I'm sorry that you're so energized by this talk. Because really all I have been talking about is the peace of your true nature. So either I'm not doing a very good job, or you haven't understood what I've been saying, or more likely a bit of both.
Shifting experiences when you're moving through processes of transformation, and
but don't pay so much. Don't be so infatuated with your shifting experiences. Be infatuated with, or rather, fall in love with that which does not shift in your experience. Just this ever-present, always available, always open, always loving, always present. Presence of awareness. However energized you are, however excited you are, however miserable you are, however much you agree or disagree with what is being said, however bored or irritated you are by what is being said, it doesn't make any difference. That which is aware of your experience, the experience of being aware, is always shining equally brightly in all experience. It is always equally available in all experience. It is pristine. It is never moved. It is never harmed. It is never stained. It is never destroyed. It is never disturbed by experience. It's as clear in experience as the space of this room is clear. Why don't we notice the space of this room? Because we're so focused on the objects within it. Is the space hidden? No, it's shining in full view. Awareness is not hidden, it's not buried in the depths of the mind, behind experience, although it is often found there first. It is shining brightly in the midst of all experience. It is we who turn away from it. When I say we, I mean it is the mind that turns away from it towards objects and then says, it's missing. And the great search for it begins. the absurd search of the character in the movie for the screen. Awareness is not fundamental to the universe. This is a very common statement that we hear in some scientists who are trying to integrate consciousness into their model of reality. And because these scientists believe fundamentally that it is I, the body, that is aware, and then they notice that dogs are obviously aware because when we tread on their paw they screech, and they notice that fishes are obviously aware because they obviously don't like it when they're taken out of the water, so they must be experiencing something. And even fleas and ants obviously have a modicum of awareness. And some stage we reach a line on the other side of which we believe there is no awareness. And what some scientists are now doing is pushing that line further and further and further and arriving at the belief, which they think is the non-dual understanding, it's not, arriving at the belief that everything has a modicum of consciousness. And it ends up with statements like, the universe is aware. The universe is not aware. Fleas and ants and fishes and dogs and human beings are not aware. Only awareness is aware. It is not your body now that is aware. Your body is the agency through which awareness is knowing objective experience. But it is awareness that is aware. The universe is not aware. Only awareness is aware. So I'm not suggesting that awareness is a fundamental property of the universe. This is in philosophy called panpsychism. Pan meaning all, and psyche meaning mind or consciousness. Everything is conscious. No, nothing is conscious. Only consciousness is conscious. And consciousness or awareness is that in which all experience appears, that with which all experience is known, and that out of which all experience is made. It is the fundamental reality of existence, and that fundamental reality of existence shines in each of our minds as the knowledge I am. In other words, the knowledge I am is the hint of God's presence in the finite mind. The hint of infinite self-aware being in the finite mind. And for this reason, the knowledge I am is the portal through which the mind passes on its way to eternity, and through which eternity passes in the other direction when it assumes the form of mind. It's why the temple, the doorway to the temple of Apollo in Delphi had the words "Know thyself" carved on top of it. It's why the Sufis say, whosoever knows their self knows their Lord. Whosoever knows what is indicated or what is meant by I am knows their Lord. That is the ultimate reality of the universe.
So is that another way of saying that awareness has an ultimate
awareness of other species is based upon the same.
It's the same awareness.
The same awareness.
There's only. Think of awareness. Let's visualize it, because it's easier to visualize it rather than think about it. There's only one physical space in the universe. Yes, relatively speaking, there's just one indivisible space. But every time a building is erected, that physical space seems to be enclosed by and to share the limits of the building. And it seems as a result that there are innumerable separate spaces in the universe. Yes? But when the space, when this building is taken down, nothing will happen to the space that seems to be inside of it. In fact, when this building was erected, nothing happened to the space which it seemed to enclose. In fact, the space in this room is the same indivisible space that exists, relatively speaking, in the entire universe. In other words, this room is in that space. This space is not in this room. Exactly the same way, the awareness with which each of us knows our experience seems to be enclosed by the four walls of our body, and as a result seems to share its limits and its destiny. But when this body is taken down, or when the body disintegrates, nothing will happen to the awareness which seems to be enclosed by it. Just as when this body was born, nothing essentially happened to the indivisible awareness which now seems temporarily to be enclosed by it. Deep sleep, normally we think that deep sleep is the absence of awareness. It's not the absence of awareness, it is the awareness of nothing. No, awareness is self-existent. It is the only thing, it's obviously not a thing, that is self-existent. Everything else depends on awareness. Only awareness, but awareness depends on nothing.
Well, how do we infer that it exists, if it only exists?
We don't infer that it exists, we experience that it exists. When I say we experience that it exists, we are the awareness that knows that I am. That is not an inference, it is an experience. It is awareness's experience that it is aware. And that knowledge shines in each of our minds as the knowledge I am, or I am aware, or the feeling of being.
So this goes back to my first question. Is there awareness without experience?
Yes. There is awareness without objective experience. But the mind cannot register that, because all there is to the mind is a colouring of awareness. We could say that mind, that is thinking, feeling, sensing and perceiving, is the activity of awareness. It is in the form of the mind. In other words, there isn't such a thing as a mind that appears in awareness. There is just awareness. And the mind is the activity of awareness, like the movie is the activity of the screen. So in the form of the mind, awareness knows objective experience. But it cannot know itself in the form of the mind. The mind is precisely the activity in which and through which awareness knows objective experience. But in order to know itself, it doesn't need to assume the activity of the mind. In fact, it knows itself in between the activities of the mind. And therefore the mind has no access to awareness, although it is made of it. In the same way that the character in the movie cannot see the screen, because she is herself a limitation of the screen. At the same time, all there is to her is the screen. The mind cannot know awareness, but it is made of awareness. So the mind that seeks awareness is like a current in the ocean in search of water. The mind that asks, does awareness exist without objects, is like the current that says, does the water exist without currents? The currents are not necessary to the water. Although they are made of it. And there are many ways in experience to access this understanding, this experiential understanding, but one of them was one of the questions I asked earlier this evening. What is it that is continuous in my experience? And if you ask yourself, really ask yourself, what is continuous in my experience, or from what does experience derive its continuity? And see where your mind goes to find the answer to that question. So it's a... Don't think about it. Don't work it out rationally. Ask yourself the question. Notice, first of all, experience is continuous. Then observe that no thought, feeling, sensation or perception is continuous. So ask yourself, what then? From what does experience derive its continuity? And then ponder that. Go to that which is continuous, or more accurately, ever-present in your experience. Don't just work it out rationally. There are many other ways. What is the essential nature of my mind? What never leaves me? Am I aware? The traditional question, who am I? These are all sacred questions. They are sacred questions because they are all variations of the same question, a unique question that takes the mind on a unique journey in a directionless direction, away from objects towards its essential, irreducible nature. We're getting short of time, and I'd like to give a chance to, if there are no other questions. Oh, I think there are.
Come to you. Yeah.
Take now the thought, I. And ask yourself, to what does that thought refer? Where does your mind... Sorry? No. I didn't ask you to go to the thought about yourself. When you have the thought I, the thought I represents something. You are thinking about something that you call I. What is that?
It's
What is that? First of all, notice that you have always been I. Yeah? Have you not always called yourself I? Have you not always been yourself? Okay, so I must obviously be that element of your experience that has always been with you, that has never left you. What is that? See what happens to your mind. Where does it go to find the answer to that question? You could say inside, as long as by inside you don't mean inside the body. But it goes inside. It's a way of saying it goes in an objectless direction. Keep going. Anything that you come across that poses or masquerades as I, notice that I am aware of it. And then ask yourself the question, who is this I that is aware of it? And take off again from the object on which your attention has landed, and keep tracing your way back to what you call I until you cannot get any further. You say just awareness. I wouldn't say just awareness. But you're right, it is only awareness or being aware or self-aware being. But that is quite a lot. It is the stuff out of which your entire experience is made. And don't just go there once, don't ask yourself just once, what is it that has always been with me, or what is it that knows my experience, or what is the essential nature of the mind. Don't ask these questions once, ask them over and over again, not in a mechanical way, not who am I, who am I, who am I, who am I. Ramana Maharshi never meant that. He just meant ask yourself the question once. Who am I? Or what do we mean by I? See what happens to the mind. See where the mind goes to find the answer to that question. It's the same question as, what is it that knows my experience? What is it that never leaves me? What has always been with me? All these questions are the same question. Ask them to yourself, not out of discipline, not as a practice, out of love and interest. Ask yourself these questions over and over again. And as we do it, without even each time our mind traces its way back to its essential nature, and its essential nature begins to make its presence known in our experience. It begins to emerge from the background of experience and to impress its peace on us. Go there again and again until you feel you begin to make your home in that or as that.
I would appreciate your elaboration on a question. The word awareness has within, in its common usage, an inference, awareness of, just in a subtle sense. And so I often also explore the sense of being, and it has less of an inference. And it seems to describe how I experience this awareness. So I'd appreciate how you could address that subtle inference that the word awareness is commonly used for in our language. Because what you're really referring to that words cannot ultimately describe, right, which is prior to the word or the source of the word, it's the best we can do is search, obviously. And in Sanskrit, there's beautiful words for that which is beyond, which I'm not aware of, but I read Nisargadatta enough to be touched every time he points to even beyond I am. So I'm wondering if you would just share, if you have any thoughts about what I'm sharing.
The experience of being expresses itself in our mind as the knowledge, I am. Yes, if you were to describe the experience of being, the words I am refer to that experience. Therefore, the experience, I am, or our essential being, is known. Otherwise we wouldn't be able to say, I am. We say I am because we know I am. Yes? I know that I am. Now, is the I that knows that I am the same I that I am, or a different I?
I'm not sure, because...
Well, is it not you that knows that you are, or is it somebody else that knows that you are?
Right, so that seems to be happening here.
It is you that knows that you are.
You as the... as
the one that knows. I know that I am. It's obviously the same I. There are not two different I's in you. One that is,
right,
and one that knows.
Right.
I know that I am. We cannot assert I am if we do not know that I am. And the I that I am is the same I that knows that I am. In other words, our being is also knowing. It knows itself. It is not just being. It is aware being.
This is my actual question, because there's moments like I actually, when you ask me that question, are you, or I get to say I am, even for me at times that feels like too much.
Well, it's true that the knowledge I am is a reflection in the finite mind of the true amness or being that is behind or beyond the I am. So the I am is the first expression of God's infinite being, or the absolute, in the mind. So the knowledge I am is like
fragrance.
It's like the fragrance of God's infinite self-aware being in the mind. But it is a portal for the mind. It gives the mind the hint. That's the direction to go. Go to the feeling of being, or the knowledge I am. Because the mind, as the mind goes in that direction, it, as it goes, traces its way back to the experience of simply being or being aware. It is gradually divested of its limitations, as Rumi said, flow down and down and down in ever-widening rings of being. When he says ever-widening rings of being, he means as the mind goes towards the experience of being, it is gradually divested of its limitations and at some point stands revealed as that for which it was in search.
That's touching to me, because really you're talking about even the dissipation of the I am.
Yes. Yes, the I am is the... the first name, the Christian name of God. It's the name of God in the mind. It indicates the true amness, which is beyond the mind and yet pervades the mind.
In the way you just touched it, instead of just I am, it's the amness itself.
Yes.
That is prior to individualization, right?
Yes.
Individual expression.
Yes. Each of our minds is a temporary limitation of that infinite amness. And that infinite being shines in our minds as I am, and it shines in the world as it is. Look at everything in the world, the fan, the radiator, the walls, the table. We say everything is, the microphone is, the wall is, the fan is, the curtain is. Everything is. Everything exists. Existence is shared by everything. The existence is the isness of all things. And the isness of all things is the same being as the amness of all selves. That's what it means in Christianity. It's what Jesus meant when he said, I and my Father are one. The I that I am, and the ultimate reality of the universe that is, the amness of self and the isness of things, is one indivisible, infinite being. God's infinite self-aware being. Commonly known as I. The only I there is. Which is reflected in each of our minds. Like sunlight reflected in 10,000 puddles. But it's always the same sun, the same light of awareness that is refracted in each of our minds as the knowledge I. So I is the portal through which each of our finite minds goes back to its eternity, our shared self-aware being. In this tracing of the mind back to its source in the mystical Christian tradition is called the practice of the presence of God. The surrender of the mind into the heart of awareness. I think we must stop there. Thank you very much.